From Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty reporting. More than 50 Palestinians were killed and hundreds more wounded in clashes along the Israel-Gaza frontier as the U.S. officially opened its embassy in Jerusalem, part of the 70th anniversary celebrations of Israel's founding. Tens of thousands of Palestinians converged on the border with Israel, some using slingshots to hurl stones at Israeli troops, who responded with tear gas and in some cases live fire. Saeb Erekat, a senior aide to Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas, denounced the Israeli use of force.
An act that tantamount to a war crime, which we condemn with the strongest possible terms, and urge the international community to move to provide international protection for our people.
It was the worst violence involving Palestinians since 2014. Mr. Abbas called for 3 days of mourning and a general strike. White House spokesman Raj Shah blamed Hamas for the violence.
Hamas is responsible for these tragic deaths, that their rather cynical exploitation of the situation, it is what is what's leading to these deaths, and we want them to stop.
The violence took place as the U.S. Embassy was formally opened with a ceremony in Jerusalem Monday. Among those on hand, the Deputy U.S. Secretary of State, John Sullivan.
Moving the U.S. Embassy on a broader scale is also a step toward advancing peace in this city, in the broader region, and throughout the world.
Palestinians who view Jerusalem as the future capital of a Palestinian state denounce the move. The World Health Organization has given the green light to the Democratic Republic of Congo to import and use an experimental Ebola vaccine. The UN agency said the DRC has reported nearly 40 cases, probable or confirmed, of the deadly virus, including 19 fatalities. This is VOA News. With nearly all votes counted, it appears supporters of Shia cleric Muqtada al-Sadr are the big winners following Sunday's parliamentary election in Iraq in the first ballot since the defeat of Islamic State. Iran-backed Shia militia chief Hadi al-Amiri's bloc came in second, followed by incumbent Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi. Washington Institute for Near East Policy Distinguished Fellow and former Ambassador James Jeffrey said it was not a good outcome for Iran.
Essentially, you can form an anti-Iranian coalition with Muqtada al-Sadr's people, Alawi folks, the Kurds, Abadi, and the al-Hakim people.
But he said the electoral outcome was also not good news for the U.S. Sadr is an important opponent of both the U.S. and Iran. Jeffrey said a lot of coalition building will now get underway, and it's possible Mr. Abadi may emerge as, again, a consensus prime minister. A top Chinese trade official arrives in Washington Tuesday for a week of talks aimed at averting a trade war. China has welcomed President Donald Trump's efforts to resolve the sanctioning of Chinese telecom giant ZTE, which uses U.S. components in many of its products. It misled regulators about shipments to Iran. University of Chicago political science professor Dali Young said ZTE has been hit hard by the restrictions.
The earlier sanctions on ZTE have been crippling to the company, which has already suspended the sale of many of its products within China and, in fact, globally.
Meanwhile, Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross said bilateral disagreements remain wide on narrowing the trade imbalance between the U.S. and China. The Parliament of the Spanish region of Catalonia Monday voted in a new separatist leader who has promised to continue to work toward independence from Spain. Quim Torra was narrowly approved by just a single vote, with four lawmakers abstaining. Catalonia's October 1st independence referendum prompted Madrid to impose direct rule. Australian climber Steve Plain has become the fastest climber to scale the highest peaks on seven continents, taking just 117 days for a feat called the Seven Summits. He successfully scaled the tallest Mount Everest Monday. May is considered the best climbing month on Everest, Plain among at least 30 other climbers reaching the summit on Monday. Scientists now say a new look at old data suggests Europa, a moon of Jupiter, may support life, with evidence of water plumes. A bend in the moon's magnetic field observed by NASA's flying by Galileo spacecraft in the 1990s appears to have been caused by a geyser gushing through its frozen crust. And the U.S. Supreme Court Monday ruled the states can legalize sports gambling, striking down a 1992 federal law barring it in most places. The justices voted 6-3 to back an effort by the state of New Jersey to allow such wagering. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Tuesday, May 15th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Campaign has ended for Burundi's controversial referendum that some say will keep President Pierre Nkurunziza in power until 2034.
This referendum is not about term limits. It's not about one person or another. This is about the stability of this country, the consolidation of democracy, the consolidation of institutions that have been put in place by the citizens.
Nancy Mutuni is the spokesperson for Burundi's ruling CNDD-FDD party. Liberia's Nobel laureate Lema Bowi says she is 100% for affirmative action in Liberia. Zambia's UPND party says former President Rupia Banda is not qualified to mediate between President Lungu and Hakainde Hichilema. And is former Malawi President Joyce Banda trying to make a run for the presidency?
The former president, Dr. Joyce Banda, has met leaders at regional levels, but ultimately, whatever consultation she makes, she will have to make a personal decision.
Andy Kuichi Chantuya is the spokesperson for former Malawian President Joyce Banda, who was behind Gambia's post-mayoral election violence. And the World Bank's president calls for business-like focus on health and education in developing countries. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Campaigning has ended for Burundi's controversial referendum that some say will keep President Pierre Nkurunziza in power until 2034. The vote is this Thursday. The two-week campaign had been marred by allegations of widespread human rights abuses and hate speech, with the country's often splinter opposition saying that Thursday's vote will not be free and fair. Moses Javier Rimana reports from Bujumbura.
Two days away from conducting a referendum in Burundi, which may see the amendment of the country's 2005 constitution. Opposition and ruling party conducted rallies countrywide to support or oppose the amendment of the country's constitution. Despite the Independent Electoral Commission saying that the campaign process ended well, opposition leader Agathon Rwasa said that there is uncertainty on whether the process will be free and transparent.
Many obstacles, people who were being blocked, transporters who were being intimidated and were refrained to offer the transport services, policemen who has been in jailing people just because of this campaign. So there were many hindrances, but thank God we have come through.
The ruling party CNDD-FDD ended its 2 weeks campaign in Bujumbura, where hundreds of people turned out to support the constitution amendment. Nancy Mutoni is a spokesperson of the Burundi's ruling party CNDD-FDD.
This referendum is not about term limits. It's not about one person or another. This is about the country, the stability of this country, the consolidation of democracy, the consolidation of institutions that have been put in place by the people, by the citizens.
Burundi's constitution was at the center stage of the country's political crisis that erupted in 2015. Among the articles that will be amended is Article 96 that allows the president to run for not more than two terms in the office. If amended, the president will be able to run in the office for as many terms as he wants, but not more than two consecutive terms. Citizens in Bujumbura remained reluctant to voice out their opinion ahead of this Thursday's referendum. But Omar Niyukuri, a ruling party supporter, said it was high time the constitution is amended.
I also voted yes for the 2005 constitution. That agreement, the Arusha agreement that we've been talking about, is an agreement that was called by other people as a power-sharing agreement. It's not about Burundians, it was about politicians who wanted to share power. So it's high time people can talk about development of the citizens of Burundi.
As the referendum is 2 days away to decide whether or not to amend the country's constitution, the Burundi government has been criticized by the international community, including the European Union, warning that the amendment may jeopardize the 2000 Arusha agreement that restored peace and stability in the country. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
Former Malawian President Joyce Banda has been consulting leaders of the opposition People's Party as the group plans for its convention before the end of this year to choose its presidential candidate for next year's general election. Banda recently returned to Malawi following its self-imposed exile in the United States. Meanwhile, there are reports that Malawi's Anti-Corruption Bureau is continuing its investigation into former President Banda's alleged role in the so-called Cashgate, which occurred while she was president. But Adekuchi Chuntuya, spokesperson for former President Banda, tells viewers Peter Clotty that the former president is focused on strengthening the opposition People's Party to win the 2019 general election.
So far, the former president, Dr. Joyce Banda, who is the president of the People's Party, has met leaders at regional level. So she's met the people in the northern region, central region. She's meeting tomorrow. She has met people in the eastern region. She will then go on to district level to also meet people. And today she just had a national executive meeting with the top members of the party. But ultimately, it must be made clear that whatever consultation she makes or whatever information or responses that she gets, ultimately she will have to make a personal decision about whether to present her name for election at the convention.
What happens if the people decide to choose her to represent the party in the next year's election? Because I understand some people are of the view that she is the only person who has the pedigree and perhaps the chance to provide some stiff challenge to President Atapita Mutarika in the next presidential election next year.
Actually, that shouldn't be some people. That should be most people believe. And not only do they believe that she can put up a stiff challenge against the current president, Peter Mutharika, but they actually believe that she is the only capable person. So people, when they look at Dr. Joyce Banda, they're not looking at whether she can put up a challenge against Peter Mutharika or whether her party can actually manage to remove the DPP from government. But it's after that what happens. And a lot of people taking into consideration her experience and the experience that they had over the 2 years that she was president and that the People's Party was governing, they actually believe, and rightly so, that it is the People's Party and Dr. Joyce Banda who can actually solve the problems and the challenges that Malawi is currently facing.
The head of the Anti-Corruption Bureau said that the former president has not been cleared yet. That supposedly means that she is still under investigation over a raft of allegations of graft during her presidency. What is the former president's reaction to some of these reports coming out?
The same head of the Anti-Corruption Bureau said once before that he had no direct link of JB over Cashgate, and that's when they were clearing her. We feel that the coincidence is very shocking, very tricky, and that they're contradicting themselves. But the Anti-Corruption Bureau or the head himself cannot really just come up 5 months later and say I was misquoted. At a press conference that he called on his own, he made the remarks. He said he cleared at that time.
Adekuchi Chuntuya is the spokesman for former Malawian President Joyce Banda. He spoke with U.S. Peter Clotty from the capital, Lilongwe. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, May 15th. Daybreak Africa time is 14 minutes past the hour. Zambia's main opposition United Party for National Development, the UPND, says former President Rupia Banda is not qualified to mediate between President Edgar Lungu and UPND leader Hakainde Hichilema. Mr. Hichilema has yet to recognize President Lungu as the legitimate president because he says Lungu's election was fixed. But yesterday, former President Banda disclosed he had communicated with Mr. Hichilema asking him to accept President Lungu as the legitimate president of Zambia. Zambia as a first step towards national dialogue. Cornelius Mwitwa, UPND deputy spokesman, says former President Banda cannot claim to be on any moral ground because 3 years into his presidency, he was kicked out of office for corruption.
First of all, it must be made very clear that former President Rupiah Banda is not the right person to comment on such important issues, because after being president for just about 3 years, he was kicked out on account of corruption, and the Patriotic Front, which is the ruling party, dragged him to court under the leadership of the late President Mike Osata, and he has since been retrieved from court by the current president, Edgar Lungu. He's now a free man. He's the godfather of the Patriotic Front, the ruling party. So he doesn't command any higher moral ground for him to be able to say the things he has said.
What do you make of the fact that former President Rupiah Banda himself conceded defeat when he was defeated in an election? And so because of that, he is the most credible person in these times of the need for national dialogue to come and talk about that.
President Rupiah Banda deserves no accolades for accepting defeat. For defeat was not a question of acceptance by him. It was a decision by people to boot him out of office. So the fact that he lost and was booted out should not be meritorious on his part to say he accepted.
Is there a Zambia Center for Inter-Party Dialogue? I'm asking because is there an effort in Zambia to try to resolve the dispute between Mr. Hichilema and President Lungu? Is there a local effort to try to resolve the dispute?
In any situation as the one we are in, it is always romantic to pronounce local and suggest that local-grown solutions are better for local challenges and problems. But the situation on the ground is that ZCID, Zambia Center for Inter-Party Dialogue, is a consortium of political parties, 38 in number. How can Manchester United, versus Arsenal, who will be playing in the FA Cup final at Wembley, go to Wembley, and when they are in the stadium, they say one of the players, either for Manchester United or for Arsenal, should remove a jersey and wear the jersey of a referee and become a referee. How will that game go? It means that that referee will be biased towards their team. That is the difficulty we have with ZCID, because it is led and chaired by a person or persons or party belonging to a partisan grouping or interest. So we are saying we can't have a partisan person, someone partial or grouping, to chair such an important gathering, because they will be biased.
Cornelius Mwitwa is the deputy spokesman for Zambia's main opposition United Party for National Development. He spoke with me from the capital, Lusaka. Liberia's Nobel laureate Lema Mbowe says she's 100% for affirmative action in Liberia. Mbowe, who calls herself a feminist, says affirmative action is not tokenism, but rather giving Liberian women positions that they are qualified to do. Mbowe, who won the 2011 Nobel Peace Prize along with then-President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, says she's also against female genital mutilation because no one should decide how any woman should function in terms of her sexuality. Mbowe was the commencement speaker over the weekend at the American University School of International Service. She told me before her speech that while more and more Liberian women are active, the fight for equal rights should continue until every Liberian girl is able to be whatever she wants to be.
I would say that whilst we have a group of women who are active, we still have a lot of work to do because there are issues that are still impacting women. Sexism, you still have issues of discrimination against women. You still have issues of violence against women. And I'm talking about institutionalized kind of violence against women. And those are things that we need to look at, push for, but also look at the whole education, teenage pregnancy, rape culture. All of these things is not okay until we can begin to push, and we may not complete them in our lifetime, but we may be able to make it possible for every young girl to be able to say, I can be what I want to be as a Liberian woman, and that's the task that we have ahead of us.
What has become of those women who were part of the Liberian Mass Action for Peace, who together with you led the protests against the Liberian War? I'm asking because some people say that Lema Boye has forgotten about these women.
So, James, it's always interesting to see how people tend to find one aspect of a narrative and use it as a means of either making someone look bad and making themselves look good. I still do interact with them. Last year, if you were in Monrovia and saw that there was a campaign going on that same airfield for peaceful elections, I was fully involved. My foundation was funding it. I continue to work with these women, and I can boldly say on this Voice of America interview that there is nothing in terms of death or any kind of contributions that those women have asked me to make, except where no one reached out to me. I can proudly say that I continue to engage with them, and I'm proud to say that they still see me as the mother of the movement.
During the last constitutional review process, there was a recommendation for equal participation for Liberian women in the political process. Do you support this recommendation?
I am 100% for affirmative action. And we're not saying do affirmative action and put women who are not qualified. We're saying do affirmative action to give women who are qualified a space to go in there and do the best that they're supposed to do. Any country that came from war, there is a gap in terms of economic power. And you know, politics is all about money. For women to get there, if we don't make exception for women in terms of affirmative action, we'll never get the normal. The point that I'm trying to make is that if we had an affirmative action in place, at least we'll have a good number of women in the House who would be representing the goals and aspirations of the Liberian women.
There are still women's rights issues in Liberia. For example, female genital mutilation, rape, violence against women. What's your take in terms of activating for these?
I am totally against FGM. I feel like it's not right for anyone to decide how a woman will function in terms of her sexuality. I'm totally against rape because rape is one of the biggest crimes that anyone, not just is it taking away from a woman physically, it takes away from her emotionally and psychologically.
Lema Boye of Liberia was a co-recipient of the 2011 Nobel Peace Prize. She spoke with me from Washington, D.C. In the Gambia, there have been accusations and counter-accusations between former President Yahya Jammeh's ruling APRC party and Usainu Dabo's UDP party. This followed the past weekend's post-mayoral election political violence between the supporters of the two rival political parties. Viewer's Pan Dere Umbaye reports.
The interim leader of the former ruling APRC party, Fabakary Tombongjata, has accused the supporters of the United Democratic Party, UDP, of criminal trespass, assault, and vandalization of properties belonging to his family. Mr. Jata, speaking at a news conference on Monday, said his family home came under attack following Saturday's mayoral elections.
It came to a stage where they started stoning us in the compound, broke window vehicle windscreens, that some of our vehicles that were parked outside, even inside the compound, where we had my sister's vehicle. The back screen and everything all were broken. What was surprising to us is that the police came up to the gate, our gate, to throw tear gas whilst we were in the compound.
The UDP leader, Usainu Dabo, has vehemently rejected Mr. Jata's allegations. Mr. Dabo told Star FM Radio in an interview that his supporters have the right to celebrate the party's electoral victory. Mr. Dabo, in a counter-accusation, alleged that the incident was provoked by the APRC.
I hold Fabakary Tombongjata personally responsible for that, as the person who was instigating such misbehavior.
Fabakary Tombongjata disagrees.
Leaders have to be honest and be dictated by their conscience. If lawyer Usainu Dabo goes to say that he blames the APRC because we don't want them to celebrate, I have a right to be in my family compound.
The Gambian police have come under fire as the APRC leader questioned the impartiality of the police. Jata said the police should go after lawbreakers instead of firing tear gas at his home. Superintendent David Kujavi is the spokesman of the Gambia Police Force.
Given the political situation in this country, and one would expect that even with all plans to put in place to ensure that incidences of this kind of nature don't happen, it could possibly happen like that has happened. And we as a police force will continue to work in partnership with all stakeholders irrespective of what background or political party you are. affiliation they may be, to ensure that peace and security is maintained in this country.
Spokesman Kujabi has called on Gambians to jealously safeguard the country's peace. Dictator Yahya Jammeh's APRC party has ruled the Gambia for 23 years. The party couldn't win any seat in the mayoral elections. The APRC says it will not okay the results of the elections unless it finishes an investigation mounted by the party. Fabakari Tombonjata has called for the resignation of the chairman of the Independent Electoral Commission, saying he has lost faith in Aliou Mamary Njai. For VOA Daybreak Africa, this is Panderimbay reporting.
Leaders of development agencies say the fight against poverty needs a more aggressive focus on the health and education of the young and vulnerable. NGO and development officials spoke at the Milken Institute Global Conference in Los Angeles recently, where World Bank President Jim Yong Kim warned social unrest will spread without a business-like approach to philanthropy. Michael Sullivan has more from Los Angeles.
1 in 10 people around the world lives in extreme poverty, which the World Bank defines as earning less than $1.90 a day. Malnutrition, stunted growth, and cognitive impairment affect over 30% of children in sub-Saharan Africa and South Asia, leaving them unprepared for the automated economy of the future. So warns World Bank President Jim Yong Kim, who says the numbers are improving, but not fast enough.
Many, many, many people will find themselves undereducated and without the skills to be able to compete in the economy of the future. And so many countries are going to go down the path of fragility, conflict, violence, and then, of course, extremism and migration. That's going to happen if we don't change the mindset.
There are success stories in the battle against disease and illiteracy, says a former head of USAID who now leads the Rockefeller Foundation.
When you look at countries like Rwanda, they've achieved a 70% reduction in child mortality in just one decade. So we know that nations can be successful. What it takes, though, is more political will, more focus on science and technology.
China is a new player in the world of development. By one count, its loans and aid to 140 countries exceeded $350 billion over a 14-year period. China's new aid agency has fewer restrictions than Western agencies on their loans regarding corruption, governance, and human rights.
On the Chinese side, they basically claim that their form of interaction, which is basically doing business, that is preferable to the way that Western institutions have engaged in the past.
China's growing involvement in developing economies worries some, but Furchin says the jury is still out on its impact. World Bank lending totaled nearly $60 billion last year for improving infrastructure or meeting basic needs like health and education. Kim says the bank will release a ranking of nations in its first human capital index to compare investments and human needs on a nation-to-nation basis. One who works in the health sector welcomes the approach.
And so if we don't think about people as being part of our asset, the biggest asset class really we have is our talents as people, then we're never going to unlock that potential for the creativity, for the next generation of innovation, for the next cure that we have in the marketplace.
Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
That's it for this Tuesday, May 15th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ray Key Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer John Ellison, I'm James Barton, Washington, wishing you in Africa a very, very good day.
Hello, I'm Lynn Ormudu, host of Health Chat. Next week on Health Chat, we will discuss addressing neonatal sepsis, a bacterial infection in the bloodstream of newborn babies. For your questions or comments, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The U.S. country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. Health Chat this Tuesday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.